south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Here's something I bet you didn't know, all you folks out there interested in Colombia. Did you know that 20 to 25% of all the country's tax revenue come from oil drilling and exploration? Bet you didn't even know Colombia had oil. Well, they've got plenty. They've always had enough for themselves and plenty to export. However, now, since oil prices are at less than 50% of their peak, which was only about 2 years ago, as usual, in the case of all gluttonous governments, when times were good, they expanded, and now they're very short on revenue and feel the pinch. And so, their answer is to increase oil production. And guess what? Something else you didn't know. Fracking has come to Colombia in a huge way. Now, here's a recent quote from the president of Colombia's Ecopetrol, Juan Carlos Echeverri. He says, quote, "We can't afford to stop fracking now." Hey, who even knew they were doing it? Well, they have been. Anyway, so far he says, fracking is in motion and on the increase. In fact, there are already 7 fracking companies using this alternative method of extraction, he says. So then why, with all the environmental problems now known with fracking, has Colombia chosen to go that way? Well, one Manuel Rodriguez Becerra, head of the Colombian National Forum for Environment and former environmental minister of Colombia, says, quote, "It's the government's decision to bet everything on the oil industry and thus fracking rather than improve revenues in other sectors such as agriculture." He says, yes, it's true, the government revenues have dropped sharply with the downward pressure on oil, but adding, he says, that he believes government is not being transparent on the issue. And this is good. He says, "We need to weigh the economic and social benefits against the environmental damage due to fracking." He believes the environmental risks in Colombia are magnified due to the enormous weakness of environmental institutions here. He says, quote, "The Ministry of Environment is too weak an entity to address the problem of fracking and lacks the technical resources to assess the issue. Not only that, he says, it has much to do with biological and geological risks here because our country has a greater seismic risk than the United States." But not to worry, I threw that in. He says there are only 12 chemical additives used in the fracking process here. Most are found in everyday products such as toothpaste, body soap, and some medicines. Well, that makes me feel a whole lot better. How about you? Then the article stresses, what is even more worrying, some experts say, is that fracking in Colombia generates a large, heavy flow of industrial vehicles that destroy roads, much more so than other industrial projects. People complain in the U.S. about the heavy increase in traffic in areas where fracking exists, and they have a large number of highways there. Imagine that kind of traffic in Colombia, where the streets are so very narrow. That's a new one, huh? Okay, little food for thought there for all you listeners thinking of going to Colombia, maybe to escape fracking up in your state, only to find it's alive and well and down in Colombia, too. Now, in more Latin news, by the way, this portion of the Expat Files is brought to you by the fine folks at Monsanto. Yeah, right. Anyway, talk about the gringo wannabe syndrome on steroids. Listen to this. Here's something few first world gringos know. Between 2010 and 2014, first world franchise fast food chains saturated Costa Rica with an additional 244 burger and pizza joints and such. You got that? 244 extra fast food joints. And now, in 2015, the Wendy's fast food burger chain has decided to close all of its outlets in Costa Rica. Why? According to business demographic experts, Costa Rica is now one of the world's most saturated places for fast food outlets. In fact, most of Costa Rica has the same level of fast food joint saturation as cities such as Paris and New York. That, according to the Costa Rican Chamber of Restaurants. What? Didn't even know they had one. So anyway, little Costa Rica with its 3 billion people has a total of 679 first world fast food restaurant joints. That's 679. So what does that mean to all us expats, gonna-bes and wannabes? Well, it's obvious you don't want to start a restaurant business in Costa Rica, that's for sure. In fact, the restaurant business is always a bad idea these days. Unless you're way off the gringo tourist trail and have a very nice little niche and are offering something completely different. And as far as bringing a franchise of any kind down from the first world, again, look for places off the gringo tourist trail. Because the fact is, if there's enough foot traffic, you almost can't miss. Though, let's face it, you can't put your franchise in the middle of a cow pasture. Though, I guess you could say there's a lot of foot traffic there, too. Now, I repeat, if you bring a U.S. franchise down and you have decent foot traffic, you almost can't miss. Because, like I've mentioned in past shows, down here, you pay your grunt workers, you know, the kitchen folks and stuff, only about $300 to $350 a month. Whereas, up in the States, you're going to pay minimum wage at least, plus some benefits, which at minimum works out to at least $1,500 a month. Not to mention, in so many off the gringo tourist trail countries and cities, you can realistically open a business for a quarter to a fifth of what it would cost you up in the first world. However, if you've been reading those retirement blogs and rags and international living, you could do what they suggest and go to Costa Rica. Then open up a business with first world dough and more than likely crash and burn. But you knew that already, right? Now, in more news that should convince you that Costa Rica is not the place you want to live, work, retire, and or play, unless, of course, you're surfing the net for vacations and get a nice, slick, week-long, all-inclusive package to Tamarindo. To me, that's the only thing Costa Rica is good for, a nice, quick vacation. But make sure it's all-inclusive or you're gonna drop a first-world bundle, believe me. That said, listen to this. According to the Costa Rican Social Security Department, that's CCSS, their Central Evaluation Committee on Disabilities shows that during 2014, the average number of days that each Costa Rican civil servant, that's government employee, was absent due to illness, turned out to be 5 times higher than the average number of days each worker in the private sector was absent due to illness. You got that? The very definition of pus-brained, lazy-ass government slugs. And you know I mean that in the kindest way. Now, a spokesperson for the Costa Rican Social Security Commission says that, quote, things should not be this way. It's hard to understand because, you see, the average Costa Rican civil servant, that's government worker, has a lot more health care coverage and much better access to health care than the average private worker. So it would seem, therefore, they should be healthier. Now, non-government analysts say the situation is clear. What's really happening is widespread abuse by public workers, who can and do go on long-term sick leave without jeopardizing their job security or salary. This is a job stability factor which is not enjoyed by the formal private sector, for whom getting sick simply means loss of earnings, whereas government workers in the public sector get paid sick leave. Not to mention, in Costa Rica, civil servants earn on average 150 to 200% more than their counterparts in the private sector. Surprise, surprise. Now, does that not sound familiar? Sounds to me like Costa Rica's bucking to be the 51st U.S. state. Now, according to an article in Costa Rica's biggest newspaper, La Nación, The Nation, the average Costa Rican government grunt worker, that is, a person doing labor at, for example, one of the ports, he takes, on average, 29.7 paid sick days every year, while Costa Rican government white-collar workers, for example, judges, court attorneys, people with desk jobs in the municipality or the environmental division, they take an average number of 20 paid sick days per year. So, in Costa Rica, government grunt workers take about 6 weeks of paid sick leave a year, and white-collar guys, 4 weeks of paid sick leave. So then, who doesn't want to work for government? Now, we all know that's pretty much exactly how it works in government in the States, but get this. According to this article, many other Latin American countries are eyeing the Costa Rican model and governmental system, looking at it as their future model. Other Latin countries look at it as a fantastic success story. They see the huge boom and expansion cycle that occurred over the last 20 or 25 years, and they see that the cost of living and minimum wage is double that of most other Latin countries. So now other idiot, brain-dead Latin countries are thinking, well, hey, look at Costa Rica. What a success. Let's copy it. The thing no one talks about is that Costa Rica is not self-sufficient. It does not produce nor manufacture enough goods to sustain its own population. It's got a huge imbalance of trade on the import side. The boom and expansion cycle is based solely on first world tourism. And if you know what we know about the coming bust cycle, tourism is the very first thing people cut out of their budgets. Oh, and one final note on Costa Rica. According to a Belgian newspaper, let me quote this. It says, in recent years, recurrent cases of the entry of drugs into Europe have been detected coming from Costa Rica via the maritime route using pineapple or cassava exports as a smokescreen. Ports such as Belgium, the Netherlands, and Spain are gateways for drugs sent from Costa Rica. To which Costa Rican government spokesperson Laura Bonilla says, quote, we have an action plan. There is a responsibility on the part of our government and employers. Initially, we will be working in this two ways, setting up scanners and reactivating the drug control program of the United Nations. Meanwhile, we are training businesses so that they do not become implicated in illegal activities. All right, and we all know that's the usual government line. But here's what you didn't know. A shipment of commercial scanners used to detect drugs were donated by China in, get this, 2008 and remained unused and, in fact, unpacked. So then what does that tell us? A lot. How stupid other countries are to donate anything to these third world governments. Wait a minute. China's third world, right? What's China doing donating scanners to Costa Rica? Well, that's another story we'll never know the truth about. Meanwhile, the useless, mega expensive war on drugs, which was lost a long time ago, presses on. And the only thing that'll decapitate that multi-headed monster? Legalization. But you knew that already, right? Oh, and one more very disturbing article here from La Nación in Costa Rica. Oh, you're going to love this. It says here, the Directorate General of Taxation in Costa Rica has been given the power now to require Costa Rican professionals like doctors and dentists to provide information to the state which can be relevant for tax investigation purposes. Say what? That kind of crap doesn't even exist yet in Obama Nation. The article goes on to say, as of July 27, 2015, the Directorate General of Taxation, DGT, has the power to require professionals in Costa Rica to provide confidential customer information to the tax authorities. Why, you might ask? Money, of course. It says the authorities of the Costa Rican Treasury Department are aiming to reduce tax evasion by the professional segment of society. And though, according to the Costa Rican Bar Association, they say they openly believe it's inappropriate for tax authorities to request such information from lawyers, and that, in fact, it may be illegal and unconstitutional. Nevertheless, the legislation has been voted on and passed. Okay, now, note that the Costa Rican Bar Association does not mention they believe the law is inappropriate for medical doctors or architects or accountants or engineers or dentists. That is, other professionals. They've stated it's only inappropriate for lawyers. How do you like them frijoles? Oh, and one more thing. For all you gringos and expats who do live, work, or play in Costa Rica, and those unfortunates who have a business there, I'm sure you already know that the Costa Rican Ministry of Finance announced in 2013 that by 2014, all businesses would be required to have electronic invoicing. It would be mandatory. And with that, the government says, it intends to achieve increases in tax revenue ranging between 20 and 25%. That's over and above present tax collections. However, because this is Latin America, for the third time now, the government has announced that this electronic invoicing process will be delayed at least another year to 2016. Why, you might ask? Well, that's because in 2013, they purchased software. It didn't work. 2014, they purchased more. That didn't work. 2015, changed governments. Changed software and supplier and maintenance again. Didn't work. They brought in more government consultants and analysts, and well, this is Latin America, and now a huge mess. You gotta love it. No matter how they try to copy the first world, they just never get it right. But they do try, don't they? And it always starts where? In Costa Rica, where all government roads lead to gringos and the extraction of their gringo dollars. Okay, enough about Costa Rica. I promise. Again, a nice place to visit, but I'd rather live in Cleveland. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the food situation down here in Latin America. Now, you know, I've often mentioned these huge markets you can go to where the food's brought in every day, usually by little truck farmers, so you can see that most all the stuff is grown quite locally. And though almost none of it's labeled organic or non-GMO, why? Because it would be completely out of the question for a small-time farmer down here to go through the certification process. And admittedly, farmers do occasionally use pesticides. Still, there's just no doubt, when you come down here and see it for yourself, that the food in the produce markets is in a different league than any of the stuff you're getting up north. Not only is it absolutely fresh beyond dispute, everything's bigger by far and tastier too than anything you guys can get. Not to mention it's a quarter or less the price of what you're paying for it. But the problem is, you see, I can go on and on about this stuff and talk your ear off, but you really have to see and taste it for yourself. So then why am I still talking about it? Well, because I want to read you a little email that came from one of my latest new friends that came down to the last Expat Wisdom Seminar. The one we finished about a month or so ago. Now, note that when people sign up for this seminar, I always ask them to tell me if they've got any medical issues. And in this case, he could have no gluten and had suffered from chronic intestinal issues. So I'll read this. It says, "Dear Johnny, I'll let you in on something I observed on my own dietary issue after my visit to your seminar in Guatemala. I was so worried that I would have a hard time finding food that was gluten-free, but to my surprise, everything I ate, my body accepted without issue. I found that without all the first-world chemicals and other additives, I had zero problems. From the grain-fed beef, to the driveway chickens, to the fresh vegetables, my digestive system handled it all. Now, as soon as I got back, I resumed my usual diet, and I felt bloated and uncomfortable. You know, processed meat, etc. Yuck. I have since been reading labels more carefully and have been trying to avoid many of the foods I used to eat, going organic as is suggested to do. If you do another show on food, please feel free to share my experiences for all the celiac sufferers out there. Those of us with digestive issues can definitely benefit from the natural way of growing food versus the processed way. So thanks again, Johnny. Looking forward to my next visit down." So there you have it, a personal testimonial as to what the food's like down here, from someone who's very sensitive to the purity of the ingredients. And by the way, he's one of those guys that came to the seminar who's never been south of the border. I remember him saying he'd been to Canada quite a few times, but south of the border, no. And it always strikes me funny that so many people coming to my seminars have never been south of the border before or to another Latin country, especially you women who come down alone. I really have to give you credit for that. Obviously, you're in good hands when you come down to the seminar. We hold your hand all the way through it, but still, almost all single women coming down tell me that they kind of hide the fact from a lot of their friends that they're going down to Guatemala or other forbidden Latin place. Because when they do tell a few people, they always get that strange look, sometimes a worried look. Anyway, my hat's off to all you single people who come down here who have never been south of the border before. But you know, all the articles and videos and YouTubes and blogs and podcasts in the world can't prepare you for what it's really like when you got boots on the ground. So, for all you listeners up there who are still on the fence, I don't get it. When there's so many single ladies with the determination to come down and all by themselves, some who've never been out of the U.S. before, most of them, by the way, who don't speak Spanish, somehow that makes all the fence leaners and tire kickers out there seem a little wimpy, huh? And here's another email I just have to read. It says, "Hello, Johnny. ¿Cómo estás? My husband and I were recently listening to one of your podcasts where you were speaking about the government and inheritance taxes. You had mentioned getting yourself an S.A. corporation. I don't think I spelled that correctly. Would you mind giving us some more information on this? We are gringos in Canada, but I've been traveling to Latin America, Belize, and Costa Rica. We're planning going to Panama this winter. Down the road, It may be in the plans to purchase property in one of these places and would be interested in understanding more about the corporation aspect you mentioned, that SA Corporation. We enjoy your podcast. Your knowledge and common sense tips are great. My husband loves your theme song, by the way. See you next time, Sylvia and Jed. Well, guys, two reasons I read that email. One is you made me laugh when you said SA Corporation. And the other, of course, is because you love Dean Martin's version of South of the Border. The best version, I think. He's so smooth and suave and natural. He can kind of laugh through a song and you're right in there with him. Unlike so many other stiff old crooners from way back when. Now, I guess everybody up in the States and Canada has heard that term essay, especially if you watch any of those gritty ghetto street dramas. Anytime you see a scene with young working-class Latinos, that word essay pops up everywhere now, doesn't it? Which, by the way, loosely translates to, hey, man. But I gotta fill you in on something. South of Mexico, they don't use essay. They never do. That's just a Mexican thing. And since you know maybe 80 to 90% of all the Latins in the U.S. and Canada are of Mexican origin, naturally their street terms become common in the big cities in the States. Now, it's different south of Mexico and Central America and South America. Often they'll use the term eso. It sounds like essay, but they're completely different. For example, when you hear Latin people speaking to each other, especially young ones, the under 30 crowd, when something cool happens or they're surprised in a pleasant way, let's say, for example, someone's trying to open a jar or a beer bottle and just can't get it, and finally, it pops. Success. Someone just might say, eso, like, great, cool, you did it. Unlike the similar-sounding Mexican word ese, which, like I said before, means loosely, hey man, what up? Now, as far as ese corporations, which are really S period A period corporations, those are those great little legal tools that you use down here in Latin America to protect yourself from lawsuits, also used as a mechanism to sell real property or to transfer real property or a business without having to pay taxes. Now, like I said in a recent past show, less than 5% of Latin Americans know what an SA corporation is, and probably less than 2% have one. Those are always the upper middle class and the wealthy. Seems only educated folks and their lawyers know how to use these things. As a basis of comparison, they're very similar to U.S.-style corporations, though they're much, much more flexible, and they're anonymous. And that's stated right in their title. S period A period stands for Sociedad, that's society. Anonima, that's anonymous. So it's an anonymous society. Anonymous meaning, if you want, you can set it up so that your name is not on that corporation in any way, shape, or form. Not, anyway, as registered with a government agency like the municipality or within any bank or banking system. Of course, you could put your name all over it if you want, but it's not necessary. Which is the real beauty of those things for gringos and foreigners. So in Latin America, at least, you can still hold on to some of that privacy that doesn't exist up in the States anymore. Now, of course, your Latin lawyer will know all the ins and outs of those Latin SA corporations, and of course, you need a trusted lawyer to set one up. And the cost, once again, depending on the Latin country you're in, can be anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000 for the startup, with a monthly fee to keep it active anywhere from $50 to $100. So in the end, after you got the corporation, that could cost you $1,200 a year. By the way, that fee is to pay for the accountant who will be filing with the government tax returns quarterly or monthly, depending on the country you're in. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, what if my SA corporation just, for example, owns a house or a car or a boat and nothing else? In that case, it might not even have a bank account associated with it. In other words, no income or expenses. So if it's just holding property and doing nothing else, then why do I continuously have to pay that $50 to $100 a month to keep it in good standing? Well, in the end, it doesn't matter that there's no money movement in the corporation. The fact is, it's gotta file tax forms anyway. Now, of course, when you get that corporation through your lawyer, you'll use his accountant. That's part of the package. Now, most Latin lawyers have put together many, many of these SA corporations, and some of them have their own in-house accountant that does all the paperwork. He'll file the forms and keep the corporation active. Now, more than a few gringo expats have said to me, Johnny, you know, my Spanish is really good. I have an SA corporation and it owns a house or a car or whatever. How hard could it be for me to file those tax forms every quarter or monthly, whatever, as needed? So then I asked that question to one of my favorite Latin lawyers, and he said, yeah, you can fill out those forms for yours or anybody else's corporation. It's simple bookkeeping. But the problem is when you hand those forms in every month or quarter, whatever it is, they have to be signed by a certified accountant in the country you're in called a perito contador. And the fact is, anyone in Latin America with a simple one-year bookkeeping degree is a perito contador, and he has his little rubber stamp and seal, kind of like a notary public up in the States. And there's the stumbling block. You could do the paperwork all right. Maybe it'll only take you a half an hour a month. Who knows? Maybe much less, but you don't have the stamp and seal and the signature of a registered accountant in the country. So forget about doing your own corporate taxes. And remember, because taxes are so uncomplicated here in Latin America, in fact, I was looking at the entire tax code booklet for Honduras the other day, and it only comes in at around 78 pages. That's it. In fact, the book is pint-sized too. If you took a regular 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper and folded it in half, that's the size of it. So if it was printed on a standard sheet of paper, you're looking at more like a tax code of 39 pages. Versus what? 78,000 pages now with the IRS tax code? And that, folks, is why there is no H&R Block down here in Latin America. The taxes down here are so simple and easy to do, any sixth grader could easily fill out the average form. Of course, he won't have the stamp and the seal, so it won't be legal, but you get the idea. Oh, and one more thing. As far as H&R Block, guess what? About a year and a half ago, H&R Block up in the States created a division to handle expats' tax forms. Since there are over 10 million gringo expats and counting now, there are lots of tax forms to do. And most expats, even living on a crappy $1,500 a month Social Security check, will still have to file U.S. taxes because they make over the minimum amount, which I believe now is $10,500 for a single person per year. So if you're down in Ecuador, who's going to file your tax forms for you? Oh, and by the way, I guess this year now, because of Obamacare, you have to file a form stating if you have your own private insurance or you will be on Obamacare for the year. Now, I don't know the details on that, but I'll find out. So anyway, for those of you listeners who might be worried once you move down to Latin America about who's going to file your tax for you, who's going to help you with that special case of living as an expat in Latin America? Well, if you can't find a local tax guy down here or your tax guy up in the States can't handle it, like I said, H&R Block has now got an expat U.S. tax branch. Who'd have thunk, huh?
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old